Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Hello, welcome to episode 167 of the Square Ball Podcast. 10% off your legal fees when you mention the Square Ball when you inquire with Levi Solicitors. Head to levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball. Also brought to you in association with The Athletic. You can sign up now at theathletic.co.uk and use Leeds Pod for a 40% discount. I'm Dan Moylan. With me is Michael Normanson.
Hello.
And Moscow White's Daniel Chapman.
Hello.
We are currently between issues of the magazine at the minute. Number 5 was Sheffield Wednesday. Number 6 will be out for Bristol. You can guarantee both by getting a half-season sub on our website. All the remaining issues delivered to your house. And, of course, we've got loads of cool clothes and mugs and stuff like that on the website at thesquareball.net. Well, a couple of games have happened in the last week. I mean, Millwall feels like it happened 6 months ago now because there's been a lot of water under the bridge.
The positivity of Millwall.
Yeah. I mean, we're sort of 2.5 days on now from Wigan. How are you feeling now in terms of the cycle of disappointment, grieving and all that kind of thing?
I was starting to feel a little bit better and then I made the mistake of watching the highlights again for this.
Why did you do that?
And I just felt full of regret again. It's like, why can't someone just Jackie, just kick it into the fucking goal, please? It's right in front of you.
We've never been good at football ever. That's Leeds United's problem at the moment.
Yeah, I've had a couple of days where I had enough. I grew weary of Leeds United. I didn't get angry on Saturday. I felt weary with that one. But then first hints of, oh God, I love Bielsa, crept back in last night. I think I'm okay. I've reset a little bit now. I'm ready to go again.
I think it's the toughness of the second half, watching it, knowing that we weren't going to score. So it wasn't like a shock late goal that defeated us. It was there was a good half hour of real soggy misery.
It was, oh, we're doing this again then, are we?
Yeah, and we're just going to have to sit and watch it. And you couldn't like magically conjure up Big Kev onto the bench. You couldn't just change the team sheet and make him be there. And you couldn't transmit the brainwaves into Marcelo Bielsa's head that made him go, oh, Pervader, come here, go on. So there was that feeling of powerlessness as well, which isn't helpful.
I mean, I tried to offer something resembling mitigation for that goal of Wigan's going in on Saturday.
You were daft to do it.
You just want to believe the best in these guys, except when it's Kiko, where we might have to accept that he's a daft racist if it means getting a proper goalkeeper. But no, that was terrible.
I mean, straight after the game, we had the replay, which was someone filming a stream of it, I think. So it was blurry footage from a phone and just from the one angle. The highlights from Quest showed it from behind the goal from a slightly different angle as well. And on every single angle, just get to that ball. Just put it as a goalkeeper as well. You can start, if people are in your way, you can just shove them out of the way. That's what you can do as a goalkeeper. Or you can clatter into them
and fall over
and lay down.
I think the deflection took it closer to him. I think it would have been harder for him to get that ball if it hadn't been deflected. I think he actually clipped it and it was dropping,
I think you're right,
into his hands. Because but for some reason, he just wafted a little paw at it.
Well, because everybody whips the corners in now, don't they? That seems to be the thing that everybody does. They whip the ball in and actually Pablo's deflection took it high, looping in the air and probably gave him a good 5 or 10 minutes there to figure out where it was going. And it just, well, the net is the answer.
Well, that's the thing. He did figure out where it was going and he sort of wafted his hand at it and just didn't bother touching it. That was the problem.
He completely misjudged it, didn't he? He completely misjudged it. Stepped forward, flapped his arms a bit, and then it just sailed in the net behind him.
I mean, I can handle mistakes, like players make mistakes, but you'd think a goalkeeper with his pedigree would be able to catch that.
In recent weeks, it does seem that more or less everything on target goes in, which isn't good enough.
I mean, the stats bear it out.
We're moving into my goalkeeping section of the coaching course, but stop it going in the net. That's what I'd say.
I mean, when you're a goalkeeper, that is basically your job.
And the benefit of being a goalkeeper is as well, unlike an outfield player, you can use all of your body, including your hands.
I mean, he's getting into Bailey Peacock Farrell territory when Marcelo basically finally decided, like, no, I'm going to have to put Jamal Blackman in. So I can only imagine Kiko is on the phone now. If he's not got Raul Bravo's number, he's on to Bailey about whoever it was that broke Blackman's leg. Do you know anyone? Got some under-23s games. Go on, someone just leave a leg in. Because it's got to be close to that. Because there wasn't only the cross or the corner that he conceded. There was one where he had that mix-up with Liam Cooper as well that they got away with. And the numbers, we do still somehow magically have the second-best defence in the league, which I think speaks to how good it was earlier in the season. But it's just starting to ship too many, and I would have the spider in goal.
It's hard not to come to that conclusion, particularly when I know a lot of people tuned into the under-23s, which we're going to come on to in a bit, regards to Jean-Kevin and seeing his distribution in that game.
He's Meslier. Good. And he just looks more assured in general. I don't feel like he's going to do something mental.
And have faith in, although it's not necessarily representative of somebody's overall game, he saves a lot of penalties, and that says to me that he's quite good at goalkeeping. Because penalties are really hard to save, but often you'll hear the reports from the 23s and you'll hear the highlights, and it's like, oh, he's diving all the way across his goal to stop a penalty that's going into the corner. Mm. It's like, that's good. So if he can do that, I think he can do other things.
I think with Kassir as well, it's reached slightly the same point it has with Bamford, whereby it would do him good to be out of the team for a bit, because if he comes for a cross and misses it in the first minute of the next game, the crowd are going to go, oh, fucking hell, Kiko. Whereas if Meslier does it, people will be like, all right, just give him time, let him settle.
Although
it's going to be fine.
I remember, was it Willie Huffer that came in for a game last year when Peacock Farrell was out? And I think he didn't quite take the first cross or something as well as he could have done. And he heard the entire crowd going, oh, another one, bloody hell. All right, no, be nice. There was just that moment of like, oh, here we go. So he won't necessarily be immune to it, but he has built up that bank of credit against Arsenal when he looked really good and everybody saw that on the television if they weren't there. So there is a problem with Kiko because he is earning a fortune and is, you know, he's a Real Madrid players come from the Champions League, all this. And so dropping him for a 21-year-old or however old Meslier is a bold step. But it's one of, you know, we talk about Bielsa's principles. One of them is loyalty. So he wants to stick with the same players and say, it's my fault that you're not performing the way you should. But one of his other principles is that if you are in the group of 18 that I name on a match day, you're all basically, that is the first 11. It's what we've spoken about before on here when he had the big argument with José Luis Chilavert when he said that, right, the 20-year-old reserve goalkeeper has just as much right to be in the team as you, and you're a experienced international who's played at World Cups. And Chilavert hated this and went home for days, and it was a massive South American-wide scandal. So he maybe needs to bring that back and just remind Kassir, he's like, Meslier is not here just to watch you fuck up every week. He can actually play, and if he's in the 18, he's there to have your place, and just have the just do it. just drop him. Play the spider at Forest, and let's see what happens.
It was interesting.
Spiders love trees.
It was interesting to see Bielsa's reaction in the post-match there, saying it's difficult to be a keeper in our side. However, I reserve the right to watch the replay before I decide who's to blame. The answer is Kiko Kassir.
Yes, hope somebody asks him again on Thursday. Have you seen it now?
Yeah, it was.
He'll blame himself. You know he will.
Let's talk about Patrick Bamford. I'm worried about Patrick Bamford.
He'll be all right.
In many ways. He's earning a small fortune.
That's not money. He'll be all right.
For doing what he's doing. I mean, Tuesday, a week ago, he's covering his ears. Which I think people have, in a way, kind of misinterpreted the significance of that. Because he's saying, well, he's getting stick, so he's got the right to reply. Like, yeah, but it doesn't really help when you then go on to miss three gilt-edged chances and shoot backwards, and, you know, in the next game. If you've scored 30 goals and you're getting stick, then you can probably stick two fingers up. But he's been out of form. He can't finish.
It's very true. I mean, if Alan Clark had chosen to do this at some point, having scored loads of important goals for Leeds, maybe fair point if you've had a bit of a dry run and you've proven yourself otherwise. Bamford's never really had, he's not got enough credit in the bank to be doing this sort of shit. And the stats still showed that he is missing a huge amount of chances. He missed a load of chances in that game in which he scored two goals in the first half of it. I was cursing him and saying he'd never score again. And then amazingly, he did, once we decided to put it straight onto his foot stroke head, an interim goal, he all of a sudden could score.
I mean, that Wigan game, there was a guy close to me who was laughing at him. Like, I got just, you know, like every time he missed, like outwardly laughing. I mean, theatrically so as well, but laughing at him. And that's kind of the point we've got to. It's like, oh, well, that's not a surprise, is it? That's another hilarious Bamford miss.
I don't think he is getting stick either. There's a real distinction here between the stuff he gets on social media and the stuff he's getting in the stadium. In the stadium, it's overwhelmingly positive. There's people, obviously, when he misses, there's a lot of people going, ah, fucking hell. But that's just to be accepted. That's what happens. That's what's always happened in football stadiums. I don't believe that there's some golden era when strikers would miss chances and the crowd would go, oh, good effort. Lovely. Well done for kicking it right over the goal from a yard away.
But then I took my little lad, you know, as we mentioned on the Match Ball and last week and stuff, it was his first game on Saturday. So we got there early and got parked or whatever and had a walk around the ground. Saw the team bus arrive. And the only player who didn't acknowledge anybody was Patrick Bamford. And you wonder if he's maybe in a headspace where it's got to him and he's rattled. I do wonder. He was head down, headphones in, straight on. You know, because they park the bus at the end of the block and then they let them walk the sort of, you know, 30 yards or whatever.
Bielsa hands out the lollies.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they're all giving out high fives and Bielsa does that kind of bemused grin. But Bamford just, he was tunnel vision. He didn't high five anyone, whereas the rest of them did.
It just needs to, if he is being affected by the stuff online, just stop looking at it. I feel like Twitter is admittedly a less fun extension of like pub chat, where people would have sat there years ago and gone, Castlebank was crap today, why is Rod Wallace missing so many chances? But they wouldn't have heard that. But now that discussion's going on somewhere they can see it, they can tune in, and everyone else can tune in and go, oh, look at all this. Isn't it awful that we're slagging off the players? Do you know, I don't think this is anything different than has always happened.
You're right, but do you know what it's done? I was thinking about this over the last sort of two days or thereabouts, is that what Twitter has done, it's blurred the boundaries of contact, where you used to have the club that existed in a bubble and you'd have the fans that existed in a bubble. And it was very rare there was overlap apart from within the stadium. But now you've got players on there trying to be matey or even doing the corporate thing through managed accounts or whatever. And you've blurred the boundaries of accessibility and the players are more exposed to it now. And I think there needs to be a clear line between who's saying what to whom. And it just feels, which is why I feel the same about Radrizzani as well. I think he's far too prone to it and he shouldn't be. Just step away from it and ignore it. Or in fact, get off it. And like when he responds to stuff, it's not what he's saying. It's the fact that he's saying it. And you know that it's going to piss 50% of the people off. And then 50% of people are going to say, well, he's got the right to do that. And then you see a load of arguments spiral out of it. And it's wearisome. Just get off it all. I think Grayson probably had it right.
Yeah, there's the problem with Twitter is it's where the conversation has moved. So the pub conversation is now much broader and many more people join in, and it happens online, which is a bit of a shame because now all the pubs are closing. And that's fine. I think it's absolutely fine. There's a lot of people trying to shut down any discussion of anything that any of our players do if it's not positive, which I don't think is correct. You can have a conversation about Pat Bamford missing loads of chances and whether you think like his gestures to the crowd are valid or not, and that's all up for discussion, and that's absolutely fine. What the problem is when somebody comes along and then ats Pat Bamford and goes like, are you reading all this, you...
Yeah.
And that's
the blurred boundary.
Yeah, and that's where if people just... And there is like there's a rush of people after every game who will... It's not joining in on a conversation. It's just adding a player and then just a stream of pointless invective, which I think a lot of it is not even anybody trying to make a point about the football. It's just, I have the ability to slag off somebody famous, so I'm just going to do it. So it's like, at Pat Bamford, wanker. Great. I mean, that doesn't help anybody. If there is a conversation going on, if you've got a lot of people on the LUFC hashtag going, I think Pat Bamford's a wanker and I think he should score more goals and I think he should fuck off, I don't have a problem with any of that. I think football fans are well within their right to have that conversation. It's that different thing. But Pat Bamford and footballers in general need to be aware that that's what Twitter is now, that it is what people are expressing those opinions. And much as you would not have gone into a pub full of Leeds fans after missing a load of chances in a game and expecting to be everybody, oh, come on, Paddy lad, we'll get you a drink. You were fantastic today, mate. No, you'd have the same thing. Loads of people telling you to your face that you were shit. So you just wouldn't go in.
It's all Twitter is.
So don't go on.
It's the ongoing psychodrama, isn't it? and none more so at any other club than Leeds, who are currently stuck in this existential crisis until we get promoted. So everything that goes wrong is going to fuel this. It's an outpouring of anxiety. It's not meant to be directed at Bamford.
And the thing with...
But it is.
The thing with old Bambo and his ear covering is... And I don't know what it meant. Like, he's not good enough at body language. It doesn't appear to be his he's not fluent in it to be able to get his point across. Nobody knows what it's... So half the people think he was cupping his ears, half people think he was covering his ears. Some people think it was because of what was in the stadium. Some people think it was about social media. Then he did the interview with LUTV when they said, oh, you must be happy to get that goal today. And he's like, oh, well, yeah, there's a lot I could say about that, but I'm just not gonna. Like, well, don't do that either. Don't... This vagueness creates this debate about what does Bamford mean? What's he trying to say? It's like communicating with a puppy. Like, does it want feeding? Does it want a drink? Does it want to go outside for a shit? Nobody knows what Bamford wants. Nobody knows what his problem is with any of this. So at least Chris Wood, when he scored that overhead kick against Fulham, and then incidentally didn't score for a couple of games after that, he went straight back to how he was, ran to the crowd, cupped his ear, said, are you slagging me off now? And then celebrated the goal. And everyone's like, right, no, we know what that was about, because we have been... He did get to the point where he was being cheered when he was substituted, and people were laughing openly when he was missing goals and stuff and telling him to get off the pitch. So there was a toxic atmosphere in the stadium, and you knew what it was all about. With this, you've got a stadium full of people who were singing Pat Bamford's name and him doing something that nobody really understands what it was. And it's like Radrizzani responding to people on Twitter, that then it just fuels them more arguments about what that means and should he do it or what it was all about. That's it with Bamford. He might be covering his ears, but all he's done is create more noise that then means that we're sitting here again talking about what Pat Bamford does with his ears, when really the problem is what he does with his feet.
I think Billy Painter had the best response to this when he scored against Preston, and he did like a sort of a fake mopping of the brow, like, phew. Yeah. That's out of the way, sort of gesture. And that was fine, because the crowd were always sort of nice to Painter, but they were taking the piss. It was, if Billy scores, we're on the pitch, or the come on Billy stuff. It was taking the piss of him, and he must have known that. But then he also had the decency to think, yeah, I haven't scored in 20 games or whatever. And when he did score, he did a...
One of it feeds into character as well, because come on Billy, he was quite lucky with that chant in a way, in that it was, even if some people were, fucking hell, come on Billy, it had that atmosphere of pleasantness to it where everyone was like, you know, come on Billy. And he seemed to enjoy it. Like, he's like, okay, like, they're annoyed I'm not scoring, but they're not, you know, being horrible to me. At least I can do this. And it's, there was just a nice atmosphere about it. I don't think Pat Bamford would appreciate Come On Paddy. I don't think he'd take kindly to it as a song the way that Billy Painter did. And so you've just got to accept that some players have different characters, and Bamford does seem, as we've seen it over his career, to take these things and sort of act them out on the pitch. You watch it, there's a very good video that a guy who, I think it's called Jed something, he wrote a book about Bielsa's coaching philosophies, and he's done a video. He's got hold of tactical camera footage from the, have you got something to ding from the gantry? It's a camera up there rather than me this time.
It's the gantry gong, everybody.
And
we're showing, like a bonkers breakfast show.
It's showing Leeds United's movement and the triggers and when they pass and all this sort of stuff. And you can see Bamford's movement on there, and you can see how good it is when he's leading the line and making these runs. But you can also see that when he makes a run and the pass doesn't come through him, he does this big kind of stroppy, like, oh, I can't believe you're not passing me the ball. I'm going to have to run over here again now. And then the ball's like, oh, come on, boys. And he does this in every game. And it's something in his character where he gets frustrated and he acts it out and he doesn't hide that. I'm sure, I mean, Chris Wood, it was quite surprising when he did that ear cupping thing, because he's got such it looks like his face is just like an unadorned plank of plywood. And then suddenly he's got this character. But I'm sure inside, if he made a run and Liam Bridcut hasn't pinged a through ball to him, he would have been saying, oh, fuck, you know, Liam, I can't be there. But you wouldn't see him do it. He just got, right, no, Liam's not passed. I need to make another run because the ball's there now. Whereas there's this little kind
it's
of...
It's a physical expression of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Dramatic, yeah.
And so that carries through and it's not a surprise that he does these things when he scores goals and he says these things in interviews, because he's obviously, that's just his character. And I did say after the Millwall game in my match report on the square ball, was that it's a little bit like you accept the way that, you know, Alioski bites Pablo Hernandez for no reason, and Matt Click goes and he's more of a he has fun. You know, I mean, that miss was terrible against Millwall, but then he's out at Thorpe Arch the next day doing an Instagram story about trying to find the ball. And he, you know, he does graffiti and listens to Polish rap, and he's got these weird quirks. And, you know, Berardi is a psychopath with an interest in photographing the stars at night. They are, one of the things I like about Leeds is that they are all quite weird. And Bamford, this is his weird quirk. And I'm prepared to put up with it. Like, I can accept it in that context of like, all right, Alioski bites people, Bamford acts like a spoiled brat. That's just who they are. That's how they are. And these could be the bunch of quirky weirdos that get us into the Premier League. And then I won't care about whether he covered his ears, whether he stuck his thumb in his mouth, whether he started hula hooping on the pitch with his middle fingers in the air.
One thing we do know, though, is that within the club, there is a kind of a, I don't know if frustration is the right word, maybe, but a frustration at the heights of anxiety and the psychodrama that keeps playing out every time Leeds drop points. That I think there's a general lack of understanding or appreciation within the club for why that is. And I think we know that they wish it was different. And there was more understanding, like around the January transfer window and just the general feelings surrounding the club. And you wonder if maybe that's almost like the corporate tone that filters down through the club, if that makes sense. And where maybe you think, if somebody sat them all down and said, look, this anxiety is because we want to succeed. Mm. It's not because we don't like you or we don't appreciate your effort. It's just because there is so much at stake, and it's an accumulation over a decade and a half now. Yeah. We need it to turn around.
Bamford isn't just Bamford. Bamford is Billy Payer, he's Steve Morrison, he's Mirko Antonucci, he's Suleiman Dicara. He's all the players we've had in that position who haven't done it, that we've had to watch, that he has no idea who any of them are, and he had no involvement in any of this. But he's the culmination of it all, and now it falls on his shoulders, and that's part of playing for Leeds United. And I think it is unfortunate as well that the period that we're in does then add that social media toxicity to it all. But then there's an easy choice about that, of just, you know, the first 500 people who are going to be in your Twitter mentions after a game, if you've had a bad one, just don't listen to those people, because they don't mean you well. Then they're not there to be nice to you. And so just ignore that part. Don't sit and go through all that, and learn about these reasons for the anxiety, and concentrate on the opinions of people who may be equally upset with you, but are perhaps coming from a better place, that is not just lashing out before 5 p.m. Anything before 5 p.m, Twitter need like some kind of filter, so that a footballer can just delete anything that's within 15 minutes of full time, because it's never going to be good.
Yeah, I'd switch it all off until May. But anyway, to return to the football side of things, we are still inexplicably, we're still second. And I think it's easy to forget that we're not in a dissimilar position to where we were last year, as long as
we did mess it up.
No, but we did mess it up last year. But as we said before, we're not forced to repeat that.
Doesn't it feel like 2 minutes ago that we were 13 points clear, and now we're 10 points clear of ninth?
We do still have other mysterious statistics. Like, for all the fact that Bamford can't score a goal and none of our other players are chipping in to help him, we're still the fourth highest scorers in the division, and QPR are only above us because they had those two mental games against Cardiff and Swansea where they scored 11 in two matches. So otherwise, we're the third highest scorers in the league.
But I think one of those was in the cup.
Well, they probably added it to him, so it's cheating. Either way, all right, so we're third, fourth highest scorers in the league, which is a good place to be, and second best defence, which is also a good place to be, and second in the league. Loads of people, like the thing with Bamford and his XG and how he'd be better than Harry Kane and Ronaldo plugged together if he scored all the chances. Well, it's not about XG, it's about the league table. All right, let's look at the league table. We're second.
Yes.
All right.
And you can't look at the league table in isolation and out of context, but we are still second, and there is still a 3-point gap to third. Inexplicably, despite everything, despite how bad we've been, we're still there.
The form table is horrible, but form changes. That's the whole point of a form table.
If you are moving house, and who could blame you for selling all your earthly possessions and moving as far away from Elland Road as is humanly possible at the minute, then you will need a specialist conveyancing team who have vast experience. And you know who we're talking about. Everybody's favourite solicitors, Levi Solicitors. They will update you in plain English, completely transparent on fees, and they cover all sorts of areas of law as well, including personal and commercial services. You can get an instant conveyancing quote on the website, and there's 10% to knock off that number as well, because you are coming through us. Mention the Square Ball and you get 10% off your legal fees. levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball. And then obviously once you've realised that you can't run away from your problems because you're always present and you carry them with you, and then you decide to move back and enjoy it all again, then you know who to get in touch with as well. Well, Michael, you took commitment to Leeds United to new heights yesterday. You went to Hillsborough to watch the under-23s.
I did.
And how was that?
Well, it was nice to begin with, because I thought, I was waiting for them to announce the team, because I'd looked on Google Maps, was like, right, it's about a 45-minute drive. As long as they announce the team by sort of 12, I'll be able to get there for kickoff. About 7 minutes past, the team was out. Big Kev's in the team. Jumped straight in the car.
Are you? Were you there to watch Leeds United, or were you there to watch just like a player?
Just a player.
You turncoats. Non-fanatic.
Two players, actually, because Pervada was on the bench and I knew he'd be coming on.
You should have been there, whoever was playing.
Well, I wanted to see them because I'm fully accepting I'm not going to see them in the first team at any point soon. And if we're going to have a strong opinion on whether or not they should be in the first team, probably helps to see them.
What is your opinion, having seen them?
Are you suggesting that we need to start having informed opinions on this podcast? Because it's served us quite well so far, not bothering.
Well, possibly. I mean, I could have watched it on Twitter because I know the full game was on there, but I wanted to keep an eye on Kev through the whole game. I didn't want to have to follow the camera. I wanted to just watch Kev.
Oh, well, I was tapping away on my computer doing stuff with my phone with the game on Twitter, just sat next to me. So I was just glancing back and forward to it. And then I had that moment where you witnessed Inglourious Technicolor, where I glanced sideways and saw a player on the ground and realised it was Big Kev. And I went, oh, no.
It's strange because watching a Leeds game where you don't really care about the result is a bit of an odd feeling.
Again, how dare you?
Well, you know, I mean, obviously you're wanting him to win, but when Sheffield Wednesday scored, it was very much like, well. And when we got a last-minute equaliser, I didn't, you know, start shaking people about and
falling
down rows of seats for anything.
I wanted your limbs video.
So it felt nice and relaxing. I was like, oh, this is just football I can just watch and kind of half enjoy. And then Big Kev went down injured and I was like, oh no, all of a sudden I do care. I care an awful lot about this. It wasn't brilliant, in all honesty. There's no dressing it up. He looked a bit off the pace, maybe. It's hard though, because part of the reason we wanted him on the pitch on Saturday was just so he could be stood in the box when the ball came across it and he could kick it into the net. Mm. And we didn't do any of that in the reserves. He didn't have any chances in the box. There weren't crosses flying in. There weren't loads of cutbacks going on. He had one chance from a through ball, which he took the shot on quite early, as we've seen him doing on a lot of the YouTube videos. And it was a decent shot. I think it was probably just about going wide. But Foster, decent save out the keeper. And from that angle, it's probably about as much as you'd expect from him. And did shoot across the keeper, whereas Bamford always goes near post. And unless you've got...
South stand, isn't it, normally?
Well, yeah. Unless you've got Kassir in net. Front post doesn't tend to go in. But he did look, potentially because we've become accustomed to seeing our emaciated players, but he did look a bit on the chunkier side than the majority of them.
Did he actually look fat though, or was it just that by comparison with the rest of the sort of prisoner of war vibes that,
yeah, you know, I think
you're so used to seeing him gone?
He certainly didn't look any fatter than, you know,
Paddy Kenny,
prime era Hasselbank, for example, or certainly a lot thinner than Billy Painter used to look when he had his the cleavage on show at the new kit launch that year. I don't know, he looked all right. I wish I had better news.
Do you think he gets anything out of 45 minutes in the reserves?
An injury.
Well, apart from that, I mean, no, but I mean, like, would he, I mean, let's, like I'm saying, to play devil's advocate, would he have got more out of 20 minutes at Elland Road on Saturday versus 45 minutes plodding around at Hillsborough getting injured and playing with a bunch of kids?
You do wonder.
I think it's...
you can do both.
Yeah, I did see, obviously, the usual reaction of like, why are we risking him in the under-23? It's like, well, why risk him in the first team if we don't want our player to get injured? Never play them
and leave those roller skates in the box.
Yep. And never let them do anything, because they could be injured doing absolutely anything.
They'll scuff and they'll start to wear out all your roller skates if you wear them.
Yeah, so I don't think that's an argument. And you know, looking at his condition, which isn't terrible. It's not a,
no, it's
a big
not,
deal.
It's not, it's not laughable or anything.
No, he just, he needs,
I'd love to,
be,
to look, I'd love to look that fat.
He needs to be running around the pitch, and he needs to be getting some, they always talk about minutes in his legs and all that stuff. They're kind of cliches, but it is true. And even if it is an under-23s match with some kids, it's practice. And, you know, whatever you are doing, you get better at it by practicing. And so even if, and they do, they give people these things to do in the under-23s, don't they? So it might be, all right, look, in midfield, we've got a couple of children and they're probably not going to be able to get the through balls to you that you're perhaps used to from Monaco and Leipzig, but just make the runs anyway. Your job for today is to spend 45 minutes making the runs, getting the doing the movements, learning muscle memory is what a lot of it's about. And then I think everybody acknowledges that the real deal at Leeds is murder ball on Wednesday, and that's when he has to pass the test. And I think anything that sort of gets him used to what we do, because the under-23s play the same way. And I think Ben Parker on his commentary was making the point of, like, you could see he's trying to learn the movements of, like, when to go and what the triggers are. So if he's got the ball there, I have to do this run. So it doesn't, any practice of that will stand him in good stead. And we do need him fit soon. And the risk of that is the way to do it is to work him as hard as possible so he gets as fit as possible and hopefully is ready for Forest.
Is he going to be ready for Forest, Michael, or is he now dead?
He did look very limpy, but the club have assured everyone that he is fine and he's going to train.
Well, that photo of the first 45 minutes under the belt, waist up only. No images of foots in casts off, you know.
He'll be out in the light in a big boot like Kemar Roof was.
Yeah.
I think it's hard. I mean, it's typical. It's just misfortune. If that tackle had happened on 30 minutes, we'd have more information to go on because he might have come back on and been absolutely fine, or they might have subbed him off and everybody would be like, oh, this could be bad. But because it was 10 seconds before half-time, yeah, and I do believe them that he was due to be subbed at half-time because that is the sort of thing they do in the under-23s. It's not a lie that the first team players play a half and then go off or come on for a second half as Berardi and little Shaq and Poveda did. And I thought Shackleton looked very good.
In the second half, he was probably the best player on the pitch, I would have said. I was trying to watch Poveda a little bit more because obviously he's new.
A new shiny toy.
I thought it was good. Poveda, he looks lively. I can see that he might do a bit of the Pablo stuff for us, a bit maybe this season, and hopefully moving into the next season as well, he can do some of that. He starts wide and moves in, seems to move in a lot, waiting for other players to run along either side of him, a bit like Tyler Roberts does as well. Does a lot of the sort of pivoting and twisting and turning stuff.
Enjoyed on the commentary as well for that. And it's I'm not having a go at Penny, but he was saying, Poveda has swapped wings with Liam McCarron. That just shows the flexibility of him that he can switch positions. You're like, well, Liam McCarron swapped wings as well. You know, bless him. No credit to that whatsoever. Oh. Maybe he just went on the other wing and sat down. Can't do anything over here. I think that's just an oversight because, like Michael, Ben was giddy about the new boy and ignoring all the old toys.
Poveda didn't look quite as small as I expected either. The stuff about him being 5'5" and really slight. I don't know, he didn't stand out as being like an actual midget.
Did you expect a hobbit?
I did really.
A little hobbit.
Or someone who looks really easy to knock off the ball, and he looked equipped for it.
I think the Little Ian and Big Kev nicknames are probably both misapplied. Cause,
yeah, there's about 3 inches between them.
Yeah,
probably.
Exactly. But that is now what they are.
And Meslier obviously reinforces his first team credentials simply by not doing a catastrophic fuck up.
Yeah, just play him. Just give him a go.
Yeah.
Because we can sign him at the end of the season as well. And if we're going to do that, we need to have a proper look at him before we do. So just play him.
Or do we just lobby the FA and just ban him?
Yeah.
Make the decision for us.
We've drawn our appeal.
I did see someone on Wacko suggesting someone just photoshops Kiko in blackface and sends it to the FA.
Oh, God.
There's maybe.
I mean, we should say as well, for the record, we're not making light of racism and the potential charge. Of course, we're not. We are laughing at the whole point of his fall.
Although it is laughable how long it is taking them to investigate.
Yeah, it is. It's maybe. We're not laughing at it. But what are the FA doing with this?
It's very one-dimensional.
It's a serious charge, for fuck's sake.
And it's not like they're having to go through a string of emails and uncover evidence, then having to wait for raids at his home to uncover
everything.
New evidence. It's all there. It's just in what people have said. So why are they still taking forever over this?
So you say he's guilty and he should sit out at least 3 months?
Yes.
I think maybe one reason why they're now getting into the realms of conspiracy, but I'm wondering, like, if they dropped Kiko and Meslier came in and he was rubbish and Kiko came back in and then got banned, and then we're all like, oh no, Meslier's coming back again. So maybe there's some sense in just waiting until the ban kicks in and then Meslier, and we're just like, cool, and then we know if it's a 12-game ban or whatever it is. Which, how many games are there left? 16?
Something like that, yeah.
But there's two things to this, and let's pause on it. One, the FA, it's all about taking racism in football seriously. Don't let this drag for months. Get the fucking thing investigated, because it's a serious charge, and let's find out, and let's do something about it and either punish him, or if he's done something, or not punish him if he's not. But don't just sit around going, ooh. I mean, we've been, how many investigations?
Just get it resolved.
Have we been through since that started? And then the other thing is...
Well, man, but you watch like Vera doing an investigation, you know, on ITV or whatever, she gets it knocked off in an hour, doesn't she? This has been dragging on for months.
The other thing is that the season's nearly over.
We might get to the end of the season, happy to have been promoted, and then have to discover that we've done it all with a racist in the team, which would ruin it slightly as well. Mm. I would rather, as we said at the time, if he's found guilty of this, I have no problem with us just saying, just fucking sack him.
Even if he was the best goalkeeper in the world.
Just get rid of him.
Thankfully, he's not.
And we said that, we did say that, in fairness, we did say that at the time when he was actually doing all right.
It's hard, I mean, it was that long ago, I don't fucking remember.
Speaking of the FA as well, Victor Orta and James Mooney have been charged by the FA, which I don't think we're speaking out of turn by discussing this and what they've alleged to have done, because they've admitted the charges. Mm-hmm. As we understand it, Orta frog marched down to the tunnel and started ranting at the referee in the tunnel, didn't he, when at halftime versus Millwall.
Yes, and I think there was some separate ranting from James Mooney, who's the head of communications and media. I don't know if people are as familiar with him as they are with Victor, but
holding an iPad showing footage of what the referee had got wrong.
Was he?
Apparently so, and that's why they have been charged, and they've admitted the charges. So
Leeds Live, interestingly, did an interview with Victor Orta ahead of this game. I think it might have been on a Friday, and said, "We saw how emotional you are in the documentary. How have you found that over the last few weeks? It's been a difficult period. I'm improving," says Victor Orta.
It was after the game, it was the morning when he had been charged.
That's improving, is it?
Yes.
Charging down to the referee's room with an iPad.
And this is all while Radradzani's tweeting upstairs as well, so he was putting his tweet out about the ref. So everybody was very irate. They do possibly need to keep a lid on things like that. I like the passion. I like Victor Orta smashing up a TV screen when we score against Brentford and all that kind of stuff. I think is cool, and I like that he feels it.
A bit like Twitter, this is the problem of technology, though, that you can...
But big screen TVs, you've just got to kick them in.
But you saw it with Hernandez as well, with the corner that should have been. He was able to turn around and point the referee at a screen and go, look how wrong you've got this. Just look at it, please. Just look at what you've done.
And there were some suggestions from the Millwall end that there should have been something done about that, because we were replaying a controversial incident on the screen.
But that's the point. I was going to say, you're not supposed to replay controversial incidents. That wasn't controversial, was it?
Shouldn't have been.
It was a shot and a save.
Yes, and so I think that would be why there isn't a charge on that one, why everyone's going, no, that's, don't be silly about that.
The person doing the replay probably assumed they could just cue it up on the basis that it was going to be a corner, because it very obviously was.
Yeah. But you, I suppose you wonder have you seen the clip of Mourinho at the weekend when he realised Sterling's not been given a yellow card? And the way he runs at that fourth official, I think there's an argument for just straight red for that, because he can't be running at whatever you think of the officials and the referees, you can't be sprinting to get into their face from 20 yards and then...
Yeah, I don't know.
And then
if it's Darren England.
And then you're wearing an armband that says like hashtag respect and all this kind of stuff.
They're forced to wear that though. They don't actually mean it.
But then the other side of it is that Mourinho and his assistant are actually involved in the game, whereas the director of football and the head of media are by necessity sitting in the director's box. And I think if you're up, don't be getting into the tunnel. It's maybe not the place. They need some stress balls up there, some rubber stress balls or something.
That'd fix it all, would it?
Or like a dummy of a referee in one of the executive suites that they can just go in and shout at that. Something that they can take the tension out on, that means that they don't actually go and get in trouble for shouting at an actual referee.
We'll say that if
we do... I'm patenting this, by the way.
We'll say that if we do actually manage to go up this season, it's going to be Victor Orta on the pitch, isn't it, shirtless this time, not Andy Hughes. He's going to be absolutely insane, that boy. He's going to love it, isn't he?
I think he might still be prowling the low fields in his pants days after. Hugging strangers and things.
Prowling the low fields, I like that as an idea. Just to wrap up some other stuff from the transfer window, all that excitement over JKA, we never mentioned that Eunan O'Kane has left and gone back to Luton. He's been hanging around there for a while, I think, but we are picking up some of his wages by the sounds of it.
Yeah, he's gone on an arrangement, an 18-month loan, which I'm not sure under the rules whether you can actually just do that, so they've had to come up with this arrangement. It's all quite weird.
Is it a humanist thing? I don't want to be loaned. Well, people are not property.
I mean, it's fine. Like, he's gone back to Luton. I think that's a surprisingly good move for him, because we're in the Championship. Luton? He was at Luton for three games. And that's what is weird. So their manager, Graham Jones, about this move, said, Eunan's got a real strong feeling for the club, and I love that about him, because sometimes you either get a club, this is Luton, or you don't. And he's really got this club Luton Town and bought into it. He said to me that he felt at home immediately when he was here last season, although it was only his third game in that he broke his leg against Bristol Rovers. The attachment and connection to the people here has never really left him, which is a big plus. And then the weirdest thing about this is to find out that when Luton got promoted last season, he was in their dressing room on the final day of the season to celebrate.
The turncoat bastard.
So it does strike me as quite odd. I mean, I have some sympathy with Eunan O'Kane because I don't think he was ever as bad. I suppose it's personal. We all have our personal bêtes noires. I really disliked Liam Bridcut because I thought it was unnecessary for him to play on the goalkeeper's feet. If you're a midfielder, middle of the field, not the 6-yard box, not our 6-yard box. Eunan O'Kane, I thought, was fairly just mild.
He was very bland, wasn't he?
He was very bland. But
yeah, Magnolia paint.
But he had a little bit of, when he first turned up, it was like that Adam Forshaw thing, like, oh, he can pass the ball, fucking hell. It's like, whoa, that one went forward. So he was
we've given you Lewis Cook for this, it's fine.
He was quite exciting for a while. And I remember seeing him when I was up at Thorpe Arch at end of last March, which is a good 6 months or 7 months after he'd broken his leg, and he was still limping around. And also, he'd grown his hair out. He looked like Cat Weasel. He had like really long, curly hair, which didn't suggest to me that he was in a, you know, if you're not washing and your broken leg, you're still limping on it months later. And even now, so that's 14, 15 months since he actually broke his leg, and he's still not fit to play. That's part of the thing with Luna. So that, I dread to think how much that hurt.
Quite a lot is what I'm guessing.
I think it hurt quite a lot. So I have some sympathy for Eunan, but then finding out that he was in the dressing room at Luton to celebrate their League One.
I guess, though, when you've been...
Was he wearing his Leeds United blazer?
Well, no, I think once you've been ostracised from a club, he's kind of been left to his own devices or in the rehab room at Elland Road, you're kind of away from it. And I guess the players are going to want that camaraderie, aren't they? Just to feel a sense of belonging somewhere.
He'd only played three games. One of them, he broke his leg and was off, so 2.5 games.
I was just going to say it wasn't going to happen at Leeds.
I imagine he was probably, you talk about being ostracised at Leeds, going in the dressing room, they're like, who's this guy from the Spin Doctors here?
Right, we're doing a bit on Leeds versus Bayern Munich. The Legends match has been penciled in for the international break, hasn't it, end of March. We're going to do more on that in this week's Extra Ball, our other podcast. But very quickly then, what do we make of this? Happy with the opponent?
Seems slightly odd. And my initial reaction was, seems a bit controversial. Then I heard the reactions of some people who remember us playing Bayern Munich in the European Cup final, and they're absolutely livid about it and think we shouldn't be encouraging them, and they should be scum and banished and never played ever again.
Well, this is what's confusing me and what we're going to talk about in the Extra Ball, because we played them in 1992 at Elland Road, and it wasn't a Legends match, it was a first team friendly. We had their current first team against our current first team, and there was a bit in the papers about, you know, they interviewed some of the old players, said, oh, you know, it's bad what happened in 1975. But there was certainly none of this stuff where people are talking about boycotting and saying that they should
Twitter
again. I do think, it's heightened that. And it doesn't help that the club's own publicity about it was like, this is the first time that Leeds have faced them. Well, it's not 1992, actual, like, not a messing about first team friendly. It was we were going for the first division title and we played that team against their current first team at Elland Road, and it was fine. The sky didn't fall in. We didn't have to burn the stadium down and sow the ground with salt just to rid it of the Bayern stain.
I mean, I went to Bayern Munich and I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I still didn't like the fact they've stolen one of our trophies, but even still, I had a jolly nice time and I got drunk.
And there's two ways of looking at it from the centenary point of view. Is either it is a weird, disrespectful match to pick for a centenary game, or it's actually quite cheeky. Like, of all the teams to pick, let's have the one that we have possibly the most massive problem with, is kind of I'm ambivalent about that. I'm not sure the club are necessarily that clever. I think what it basically comes down to is that Bayern Munich have a Legends team and they're available. Yeah. So it's easy, instead of trying to book like a team of players from around the world separately and put them into a World 11 like the Raderby one, it's just like, oh, well, they've actually got a team that goes around and plays.
Do you know what I hope they do? I hope they bring that European Cup with them and they show it off to us on the pitch and like flaunt it in front of us, and then we invade that pitch and take it off them.
I mean, that's one thing it does do, is there is the chance of an actual atmosphere at this, which gives it a little bit more of an edge over the average.
Will they be bringing away fans? I'm just trying to think if there's potentially going to be crowd trouble at a celebratory charity game.
I will say the Bayern fans, they wear a lot of denim. There's a lot of denim.
That's the weird thing.
Sleeveless
as well.
Denim, a lot of it as well. Sleeveless.
It's not Bayern Munich. The team we played in 1992 were Bayern Munich. This is as much Bayern Munich as the you know, the Leeds Masters team that plays in those six-a-side tournaments in Sheffield, where it's Tony O'Dowd in goal and Darren Huckabee turns up. And
if ever there was a time for Michael Brown to redeem himself in the eyes of Leeds United,
that's
fans,
worse than
this is it
than Munich being invited. Michael Brown being invited, that and David Weatherall's name being spelt wrong in the announcement are two things that will not stand, as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, I've no interest in Michael Brown coming to this. I hope he stays away.
I thought you were going to say something a lot worse.
No, somebody just has a quiet word and says, Michael, you hated all the Leeds fans here and they hated you. Just don't bother.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
So the end of season promotion party will be happening regardless of how much we wobble and how much we try and throw this one in the bin. Eden J. Harris, have a look for him on Twitter. He's the guy who's tracking the booze baton for us, the location of the end of season promotion party. Why just do it in Leeds? Why not take it on tour? So it started in Leeds at the start of the season. The first team to beat us was Stoke, so they took it, and then it passes from team to team like that. Liverpool still in possession of it, having beaten West Ham and then Southampton. It's Shrewsbury in the FA Cup replay, so this could be a real, I think this is the real potential interesting turn, is this one, when it goes maybe to Shropshire.
This is, well, Liverpool had it earlier in the season and they let it slip when they played the children against Aston Villa. So it temporarily went to Birmingham and then they've managed to win it back. And now they're putting it on the line again against Shrewsbury. And then that takes us into League One territory, which is Christ knows where it ends up after that. I mean, their next games, if Liverpool do hold on to it, they go to Norwich and then Atletico Madrid, which I'd be perfectly fine with. If it ended up in Spain, that'd be lovely if we could watch it getting passed around different sunny destinations.
Could end up at Bilbao and then we have a nice Bielsa derby, don't we?
That'd be perfect. But it could also end up in Accrington. And I'm not 100% sure, but I'm not even sure if there will be nightclubs in Accrington. I've not looked any up yet. We'll see where it ends up.
We'll make our own. That's what we'll do. If it's in Accrington, we'll create our own party.
If you do know of any nightclubs in Accrington, they're any good, get in touch.
2012, we last played Shrewsbury Town. In the League Cup first round, we won 4-0. Becchio, Varney, Norris and McCormack.
Did Juve play in that?
With the goals. He came on for Ross McCormack.
I think it might have been Juve's debut.
Yeah, sounds about right. Then Polion came on for Paul Green and Michael Brown came on for Luke Varney.
Jesus. Dark times.
As we mentioned before, if you want to hear more from us and get behind us too, then you might want to check out the Extra Ball podcast as well. We bring you not one, but two extra podcasts a week these days. We're playing Championship Manager 01-02 in one of them to right the wrongs of the Ridsdale era. And in the other this week, we are doing a show and tell. We're answering your questions, doing the Bayern Munich thing. And we are playing our new quiz, which currently has the title Jamie McMastermind, but we are open to more suggestions on that. There's also a prize mug up for grabs every week too, so you can sign up and enjoy your first month free. thesquareball.net/theextraball. I mean, I don't know why we even prefaced this by saying it's a huge game this week, this weekend coming up.
16 cup finals.
They are, and the sooner we learn how to play in cup finals, the better it will be.
16 playoff finals. Yeah, let's hope it's only 16 games.
After the dramas of this last 7 days at Elland Road, it'll probably be nice to be A, away from home, and B, facing a team that is likely to at least come and try and attack us.
Yeah, because they don't let you drink in the stadium if you're inside of the football pitch. So
they did it by Munich, funnily enough, and I enjoyed that aspect of it.
Yeah, I think it would be helpful for everybody. Yeah, I think the thing with Forest and Brentford is that they are both sort of the danger teams, but they're never the danger team at the same time. And at the moment, it's Fulham a third, aren't they?
Yeah.
So the one thing that is consistent about what's going on is we are consistently top two, and every week we're worrying about a different team catching us up. And that says to me that the teams that are trying to catch us up are shitter than we are.
Brentford were that team a few weeks ago, weren't they?
Yeah, now the fifth.
And then they lost to Forest. And,
yeah.
But then they beat Hull again this weekend, and everyone's saying, oh, look how good Brentford are.
But yeah, but Hull have given up.
They have, really.
They're not even pretending anymore, are they?
You know, Sheffield Wednesday were tickling the playoffs a while ago. Now they're 11th, and they are 7 points behind Bristol. And then they've got a lot more points to take off that. Did you enjoy the Chancery Stadium experience, by the way?
It was all right. I've never seen it from that angle before. It's John Newson was there. That was nice.
Mm-hmm.
That was about the most positive thing I could say about the
John
experience.
Pearson?
Didn't spot him.
He sometimes does some corporate stuff at Sheffield Wednesday.
Do they do corporate hospitality for the reserve games?
If they'd known he was coming.
There was someone I thought might have been Steve Morrison, who I was eyeing suspiciously all game, but from he had the profile view is exactly the same, but then I saw his full face.
He is apparently now at Cardiff. Apparently he's coaching their under-23s, because he moved to...
Northampton, wasn't it?
Yeah, as a player. No, he moved to Shrewsbury at the start of the season as a player, gave that a month, decided he didn't fancy it, went to Northampton because he said, oh no, it's my old club and they've given me an opportunity to be a coach. And now somehow he's already at Cardiff, because he's a disloyal twat. Anyway.
He was very, very loyal to his wages at Leeds.
Nottingham Forest.
I think we'll win this. This is exactly the sort of daft game where we go and win. When we're all panicking and we think it's all falling apart again.
If I was to tell you they've scored 11 goals from set pieces this season, how would that make you feel?
Fine.
Okay.
Absolutely fine.
If I'm to say by the weekend they'll have scored 13 goals from set pieces.
No, we'll go there and win.
You reckon?
Yeah, I think Augustin makes the bench. We have a bounce from that. I think Paddy might steal a goal just to give two fingers back up to us. It'll all just add into that soup. The soup of Leeds United, yeah.
Yeah, but was it Bielsa who, or was it somebody else I was reading that pointed out about Kiko Kassia catching the ball under pressure at the end of the Millwall game, like that really good corner that he took, and then that happens against the Wigan. So maybe he'll be back on it for this game. He'll be good again in this one. I think Big Kev will be on the bench. I think he'll do the Pervada needed 10 days. Big Kev will have had 10 days and will have had the under-23s. He'll have had his second murder ball. So he'll be, you know, hopefully at least close enough for the bench. And that'll give everybody just that little bit more of like, yeah. If he's not there, it's kind of, this was what I based.
Hang on a second. Just stick a pin in that. I've just spotted something very pertinent from your research here, Moscow. You do insist on leaning on whoscored.com, whereas we think it's generally nonsense.
You say leaning, I say standing on the shoulders of giants.
Weaknesses, defending against through ball attacks. You know what JKA likes to get on the end of, don't you?
Yeah.
Sorry, go on, anyway.
I've completely lost my train. Oh, yeah, the Tustman report after the Wigan game was that it would have been nice just to have Bielsa just to relax his rules slightly because of the impact it would have on the crowd of like, okay, we get it. And I think it's true. Players have to conform to what Bielsa wants because it's a matter of fairness that the 11 players on the pitch have all had to do this. So you can't just come waltzing in and be like, I'm not going to do any of this exercise stuff. Just put me in the team, because that creates disharmony. And one of the things people talk about with the O'Leary era is when Robbie Fowler turned up and started giving it the big I am, and it was kind of it hadn't been like that at Leeds up until that point, and he kind of came from outside and caused trouble. So they've all said Lian has fitted in very well, so we need Big Kev has to do what everybody else has done, so everybody is starting from a position of fairness. But the other side of that is to remember that the crowd are part of this as well, and the difference it would have made to us to just have Big Kev on the bench. And I think it's more for this game that if he's not on the bench, the deflation that we'll all feel looking at the team sheet and seeing he's not even gone. I mean, there's an element as well. If he plays the under-23s game on Friday night and we see him in that and know he's not going to be playing the next day, then it's going to be, especially because it's 5:30 kickoff, so that's a full 20 hours of grief on Twitter. So just to avoid all that, I think Bielsa just needs to kind of just have that little, maybe don't even bring him on if he's not ready, but just say, right, just sit on the bench to keep everybody calm and manage that aspect of the
and
football.
You're an option
well.
If we need it.
Yeah, but also you're a tubby bastard. So you're not getting anywhere near my fucking football team. I'm sure Bielsa puts it in more generous. No, he probably doesn't. Apparently they're all shit scared of being weighed in every day, aren't they? So that's probably what it's like. But I think we need his presence just to give everybody that, not even to give everybody a lift, just to stop everybody from descending into just anger.
I'm going to make a bold prediction now, and you're going to call me an idiot, and you'd be right to call me an idiot. These two games, Forest away, Brentford away, 4 points from these, if not six.
You know what you are, Dan?
I mean, I know. I'm just believe within myself that at some point we turn this around.
I think we can beat Forest.
They weren't very good at Elland Road, were they?
No.
This was one of the games when we had that little run of them at the start of the year when we were absolutely battering teams for the full 90 minutes. In fact, we're still on that run now. Battering teams for 90 minutes and being unable to score. And their equaliser in this was particularly scruffy. I think it was a foul and a handball from a corner, wasn't it? So shouldn't have counted. So we should actually be further clear than we are of Forest. It does feel vital though, these games, because it's kind of we're playing Forest, who are 4 points behind us, playing Brentford, who are 5 points behind us, and you start thinking, and then you play Bristol, who are 5 points behind us, and you start looking at this run of three games, you think, God, they could all, at the end of this run of three games, they could all be ahead of us.
We'll beat Forest, we'll beat Bristol. Brentford, we never win there. Pontus Janssen will be up for it in their defence, and they'll just have all these weird players that they've scouted off Bet365 and nobody knows who they are.
I was looking at Brentford. Do you know when we did last win there?
Go on.
26th of August, 1950. I mean, so, we've admittedly not played them an awful lot.
No.
But our last results there, none of these are in our favour. 2-0, 3-1, 2-0, 1-1, 2-0, 0-0.
And whoscored.com says their weaknesses are avoiding offside and aerial duels. And then I won't bother listing all their strengths, but it's not like they've only got two. They're very strong at counter-attacks and defending set pieces. So
very strong at football.
Yeah, I think that's basically the message from them. So Brentford worry me. But Forest are a myth, aren't they? They've got the Spoonerist Sol Bamba in goal. B. Samba, I don't know who he is. And yeah, grabbing and that's it.
I mean, Lolly's their kind of attacking, dribbling player, but every time I see him, I'm get frustrated because I think he's left, from memory, I think he's left-footed but plays on the right and constantly just comes in field, and he's absolutely useless if you just show him outside. It's all we need to do, because he's a bit like Bamford in that he will not do anything good with his right foot, so just let him use it all game.
Alioski will have him licked.
Literally.
Lolly, you see.
Yes.
And in every sense.
Yeah.
Can you be sent off for licking somebody? I suppose it's ungentlemanly conduct, isn't it?
We will find out before the end of the season. As well as doing this podcast in the first half of the week, we do a weekly show with Phil Hay as part of our partnership with The Athletic. Search for The Phil Hay Show in your podcast player. It's totally free. One of 20 that The Athletic are doing is The Phil Hay Show. Catch up with Phil's writing on The Athletic. Go to theathletic.co.uk/LeedsPod and you can subscribe right now with 40% off. Heroes and villains from this week then, boys, what we got?
Ken Bates.
Yes, the Villainy Awards up first, named in Ken Bates' honour. What's Ken doing? Are any of the Kens?
Well, Wyoming Ken, I mean, his Facebook page goes from strength to strength. When we first mentioned it, he had 132 likes. Last week, 211. This week, he's over 400. And his every post now is being littered with Leeds fans asking him about building hotels and Susanna and selling our best players, etc., etc.
I feel like we've unleashed something here.
We have a little bit, yes. But he also seems like not that nice a fella.
No.
So I'm not that bothered.
Why? What is it about him you don't like personally?
Well, I don't know. He's the header image is a worry to me, where it says something about where regulation grows, freedoms die, or something.
Eagles and freedom, and
it's that sort of imagery always worries me. And then this week he's put a link on there because there's Casper was voted, there's some sort of diversity score thing that goes on, and Casper's pretty much as low as it gets. So to try and sort it out, council voted in favour of an LGBTQ advisory committee, and Ken ain't in favour of it.
Councilman Ken is not in favour.
Do you want to hear from actual Councilman Ken?
Yeah.
Council voting 6-3 in favor of moving forward on an LGBTQ advisory committee, but opposition says creating it opens the doors to more special interest boards.
That really opens up the possibility of anything in town that people have one creative group, whether it's pets, whether it's the bicycling pedestrian.
Councilman Bates instead voting for a broad human resource advisory committee, contesting that with exception to the city's disability council, members of other niche communities can make their voices heard.
Any LGBT, any person of race, any person of religion can come right down to the podium and express their feelings of what they want to see council move to.
The phrase person of race, I think, aren't we all a person of race, one way or another?
I feel like we're possibly straying into territory we should avoid here.
Anyway, that's Councilman Ken.
Leave the race stuff to Kiko Casilla, hey?
A bicycling pedestrian was an interesting...
It does all seem... Yes, he's setting it up where he'd rather have a board that he can ignore, isn't it? I know we are at risk of getting into actual Casper Council politics here. but I don't want a specific LGBTQ advisory committee. I want a committee that everybody can come to, because it'll be much easier if they're all in one place and I can ignore them. Anybody who's got a special interest comment to make, just let them speak and I'll ignore them.
What I don't like is he sounds sort of more younger and slightly effeminate compared to our Ken. This one.
Would you prefer to hear it in there?
I would definitely prefer.
Bicycling pedestrians. First of all, it'd be the gays, then it'd be the pets. We'll have to let them all in.
Who else have we got for nominations for villainy?
Speaking of pets, Darren England.
Yep.
I don't know who he's been interfering with, but...
Or what?
For his England, like a quintessentially English animal, hedgehog.
I was going to say a bulldog.
I was thinking like a little hedgehog in a waistcoat, a little Beatrix Potter hedgehog. Maybe a fox twirling a cane that Darren England's chasing.
Who else would you like to nominate?
Wigan.
Just for being...
I don't mind them. I've no objection to them. They seem like actually a reasonable club, reasonable bunch of fans and stuff. But can they just stop? Can we just stop playing them?
You know, we've only beaten them at Elland Road once. Ever in history.
Is that right?
Yeah, Brian McDermott was manager, won 1-0, but the rest of the time, even that match where Gary Kelly scored from 30 years, we drew and then lost on penalties. Yeah, I checked and double-checked and checked again, and I cannot find any other. We've beaten them at their place a couple of times. It's another one like Brentford, where we've not played them frequently, thank fuck, because, there's been a lot of draws of the last few years.
Are we just going to knock it on the head, that one?
Yeah, I feel that way. My match report, I was kind of like, just if Marcelo Bielsa can get us promoted, I will accept that, like everybody, he can't beat Wigan at Elland Road. And those two things will be fine. But yeah, if Wigan had just fuck off, that would maybe make life easier
too.
Well,
they're heading that way. Who else?
Pat Bamford. I suppose I've got to be the one to put that name out there. Just keep your ears, your hands by your sides.
Leave those ears alone.
Celebrate a goal like a normal person. It looked like you enjoyed it. And that was the other...
No, in fact, celebrate like that, but do it after you've scored loads of goals.
Well, let's have the other aspect of villainy for this, because if you remember, it was a glorious comeback. I remember Lee Bowyer against Derby. Mm-hmm. He goes running towards the crowd and everybody's there in the moment, and it's limbs and it's chaos. With this one, it's a great moment, but then in the midst of it, all you're looking at it going, oh, what's Pat doing? I don't care what Pat's doing. It's 3-2. We've just come back from three goals down, and he's the big spearhead, the part of that. The guy finished off two of the chances, and we said, okay, they were both right under the crossbar, but the movement for the winner, he did very well to get a step behind the defender, get in on the cross, brilliant cross from Luke Haining, and you just want to enjoy the hysteria of that moment, and instead you've got him doing that.
You don't build statues of people holding their ears, do you? You do it, moments of joy, what you're trying to capture in that. No one remembers these things fondly.
Unless it's everybody who was in the Live Aid video.
That's true,
with the headphones on.
Yeah. Big statue, that one, though. So that's Pat Bamford for villainy. Anybody else?
Sheffield Wednesday, under-23s, kicking Kev, didn't they?
How dare they?
Not fair. They should have known. You should be like one of those kids in PE that you're not allowed to tackle in rugby.
They did get a bit spiky, the Owls in this game, didn't they? There were a few
bad tackles flying in.
Yeah, and the Leeds players sort of trying to stand up for themselves. There was one, I think it was towards the end, was it Bobby Camwer? And one of their players just kept pushing each other in the chest, like one after the other, almost like it was a silent movie, just like, shove. It's like, did you just shove me? Well, I'll shove you back. Don't shove me, I'm going to shove you now.
But we won't throw any punches because that'll get us in trouble.
It's quite well calculated. They both realised if we just keep pushing each other in the chest, we'll just get told off.
Possibly more for the hero section, actually, but I didn't mention it in the under-23s, but the size of Bobby Camwer's thighs. Ludicrous for what's essentially a child. Mm. I don't know where he's going to go with those, to be honest.
A good thigh?
I'm not sure they can get any larger. They're absolutely enormous. Anyway.
What would you compare them to in terms of like diameter?
Like a Parma ham.
Yep.
Yeah, we've got Spain and they're hanging up in the bar. Mm. Roughly the size of one of those.
Tasty as well. Who else? Mm.
Don't eat bits of his legs.
Mm. No. I was just trying
Alioski.
A Parma ham in Spain?
Well, you know.
Let's not get bogged down.
Yeah, Parma ham's from Spain.
It's not. It's from Italy. It's from Parma.
It's Parma as in Mallorca Parma.
No. That'd be with an L. It's with an R. No. You're thinking of Serrano.
I don't know. Anyway.
You geographical, uncultured oaf. No wonder Brexit's happened. Were you around?
He's Googling it now.
You were given a vote in that referendum, weren't you?
Unfortunately, I was, yes.
Fascist pig. Right, who else do you want to nominate for villainy?
Big Kev.
Yeah, why?
Get fit, score goals.
Yeah.
And then you won't be a villain anymore.
45 minutes without a goal. Nice.
Disgraceful, isn't it? How dare he?
Yeah, glad we didn't bring him on. He'd have only stunk out the place.
Turning on him already. Love it. Right, who are we having for?
Pervada didn't score either. No.
Yeah, no, but he's little and cute.
And how many assists?
None, as far as I could tell, no.
Rubbish.
Right, who are we having?
Wasn't impressed with him against Millwall and Wigan either.
Nope.
Who are we having for villain?
Darren England.
Yeah.
Because I feel like everything that's happened since has kind of overwhelmed how bad he was. It's 17 decisions that Angus Skinner says he's taken to the FA, like Prince with 21 positions in a one-night stand. Darren England...
It was 23, wasn't it?
Well...
Even more.
17 decisions in a one-night Millwall refereeing.
It was a pig's ear, wasn't it? It was a pig's ear. He made a pig's ear of it.
You think he's teaming up with Keith Stroud. But yeah, just not fucking good enough. And now we've got Victor and James in trouble because of him. And even Pablo was cruising for a booking, and Pablo's lovely.
Angus Kinnear covered it quite nicely in his programme notes, actually. He said, while most of our feedback to the match official assessors this season has been around interpretation of the rules, some of the decisions against Millwall fostered to add simply not paying attention to our list of concerns.
No, but it's like a school report, isn't it? Needs to concentrate more. All right, then, so England's getting that. What about the Andy Hughes Hero Award? It's been a fairly dismal week, so heroes in short supply.
Pat Bamford scored 2 goals. Brilliant player. And as we were saying, the second one, very good movement.
Off hand to ear.
And a good fit. Both hands as well, not just one. And, you know, he's... who scored our other one? It was Pablo, wasn't it? It was deflected. I was going to say he's the only player who scored, but I suppose Pablo did get one. So Pablo can be a hero as well for scoring a goal, which is more than...
2 in a week, though.
More than Jean-Kevin Augustin has done, yes.
One at either
All right,
end.
Yeah, Pablo, it's cancelled off. So Bambo stands alone as our hero for the week.
Right. Anybody else, Michael?
Millwall fans. I oddly...
A stand-up bunch of guys.
Well, I was watching some of the stuff they were putting online after the game, not the official club stuff, but like some of the YouTube...
It's people. The official club stuff where you get all the Galatasaray shirts.
Yeah,
and,
I think so, yeah.
The throat-slitting gestures, that's the Millwall's family stand adverts.
Yeah, I watched some of them, hoping for some really angry reaction and some idiotic opinions. I ended up watching it thinking, seem all right then.
I mean, there was that one guy
seemed
who
like
was
quite a nice fellas, really.
Morbidly obese, so setting a bad example.
He was, yes. But, you know, I'm choosing not to go the Bielsa route and start fat-shaming people. Although we've already called out Jean-Kevin Augustin for his obesity.
Who is probably in better condition than we will ever be.
God, I look at him and hate him.
Yeah. It's interesting watching the Millwall fans as well. We do get this where they're all like, that's the best team we've ever seen in the Championship. And I enjoyed Paul Cook can have a little hero nomination for his pre-match comments. I know he went away with the 3 points, but when he just said Leeds fans don't need to worry because Leeds are going up. And I think that, you know, that's interesting from an opposition manager who's seen every team in the division and just goes, yeah, Leeds are going up. They'll be fine. They're brilliant.
At least he's got more confidence than we have. He can have a hero nomination.
Well, I think that's the point I'm trying to get across is we're all absolutely frantically worrying. And then any outsider who comes to Leeds and watches a game just goes, fucking hell, they're brilliant, aren't they? So it's odd. But then we have to nominate all of Leeds United as villains for not getting the results to match that praise.
Short field this week then, so is it going to be in the Millwall fans or Pat Bamford?
Do you want to give it to the Millwall fans? Do you want that on your conscience? Or after the weeks of strife, turmoil, personal soul-searching and having to have his hands unglued from his earlobes, do we want to make Pat Bamford feel better with a nomination for hero?
What about Victor?
For trying to rough up a referee?
Yeah, it's the best we can do. Because if England's your villain...
Fair enough.
I suppose he has signed the two players that we are most excited about for years, which we're looking forward to them being rubbish so that we can throw them back in his face. It was pointed out as well, one of the things that was interesting, well, two of the things that were interesting in that Leeds Live interview was they put it in a question, I hadn't thought of it this way, it's like the last few players you've tried to sign, all right, Dan James didn't come off, but nobody knew who he was. Ben White, nobody had even looked at him from any club. And now you've pulled Jean-Kevin Augustin and he was saying about how with Poveda, we had a look at him a year ago, but we were back of the queue and thought there was no chance that we would ever sign him and got the deal done. So he's doing some decent work.
And from that interview as well, I quite enjoy any man who answers questions like this. The only sure thing in the world is we are going to die.
So the Phil Hayes Show is out later on this week. The Extra Ball available in your podcast player as well. As we speak, we've got mags, mugs, merchandise and half-season subscriptions for the fanzine available via thesquareball.net. I thought that was a surprisingly calm and with it episode considering what a fairly terrible week we've just endured.
We won a match. We did win a game, which, you know, considering some of the terrible things that we've been through as Leeds fans, I think a week in which we won a football game.
Do you know what?
It's pretty much all right.
As those words left my mouth, I realised I'd completely forgotten that we actually beat Millwall due to the level of turmoil involved in it.
It was a brilliant game. Like the second half, you know, you rarely enjoy that kind of treat at a football match. So, you know, we'll be all right.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Square Ball Podcast. We'll speak to you in a bit.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.